Hello, everyone, and welcome to the MightyCast Episode 4. Today we're going to be talking about the importance of strength, and my name is Nicholas Ritchie, and I'm here with Chris Young. Say hi, Chris.
Greetings, everyone.
And let's see, let's just start off our discussion of strength here with people that want to be strong versus those that just want to look good.
Ah, so we're talking about strength today, are we? The importance of being strong.
Not important, right?
Yeah, no, it's not important at all, because most people don't care about being strong. They just want to look good.
What the hell are we talking about then?
Well, this is it. We should be talking about something else. We should be talking about, you know, maybe some new wonder supplement or miracle cure or whatever. But strangely enough, it always seems to be the people who are pretty strong look the best. That's a weird concept, isn't it? And over the years, I've noticed there does seem to be a bit of a correlation between the numbers someone puts up in the gym and what they look like. That's maybe it's just me. Maybe it's a non-direct correlation. It's just a coincidence, perhaps. But you know, it seems strange when a guy goes from squatting 70 or 80 kilos for a set of 10 reps to 140 kilos for a set of 10 reps, that strange things seem to happen. They suddenly have this stuff called muscle appearing all over the place, and this muscle seems to make them leaner as well. Strange, that. Anyway, I'll stop messing around with the incredulity of it all. There is definitely a correlation between what your numbers are and how you're going to look. So if looking good is the main consideration, and let's face it, with 99% of people, it is about what's the term the kids use, Nick? Looking good naked?
Yeah, they want to look good naked.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think there have been a few books written called like "Look Good Naked," "Looking Good Naked," "The Fantastic. Naked Body," "The Naked Warrior." Well, ooh, these are sounding a bit familiar. Anyway,
Nick,
yeah.
I think you're getting a bit excited here. I think we better calm down.
I didn't say the Naked Warrior Princess. I said the Naked Warrior, Chris.
Oh, okay, all right. That's
okay,
fair enough. But these. I'd hope that all these programs would have an emphasis on how strong someone gets. And obviously, when I'm talking about how strong someone gets, I'm not talking necessarily about maximal strength or anything like that. Obviously, if that's your goal, then great. But if you want to be a good muscular, have a good muscular physique, which is lean, then as a guy, you probably need to be able to squat 120, 130 kilos for sets of 10. And as a girl, probably need to be doing the same thing, 10 reps with 50 to 60, maybe more. And other lifts being in line with that. And, going on from that, going on to the other 1% of our potential audience, those who do gym work for helping their sport. It's interesting when you look at in any sport, allowing for weight category, there is no woman who can beat a man. And why is that? Why can no woman martial artist? Well, this happened a few years ago, I believe, about 57 kilo Muay Thai fighter went up against a male fighter and got absolutely clobbered. Obviously, he was not her knight in shining armor, not her her perfect gentleman saying, after you, have a kick at my leg, have a swing at my head, whatever. Yeah. This guy absolutely pasted this poor girl, who was considered to be the best female fighter in the sport. And we ask the question, why can't women compete with men? Women have just as good coordination. Women have probably better just from what I've seen over the years, I think women train just as hard, if not harder, than men. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's to do with being able to take pain during childbirth. I don't know. But when it comes down to it, even ridiculous sports, Nick, it's not a ridiculous sport, but even sports like golf, you know, where you think, well, really, it's mainly skill. The greatest woman golfer of all time could not crack the top 10 in a men's tournament. You know, as soon as the tees were moved back to where the men played from, she was struggling. You know, the greatest women tennis players, when they play against men, they come up short. They can't compete. They just cannot compete because they're not as strong. They're not able to put. They're not able to use the men use the extra strength. So a tennis player, it's not going to matter that they can bench press this or squat that. But what does matter is when they hit a ball, they can put a lot more on the ball, as in top spin, side spin, kick serves, whatever, because they have that strength in the forearm and the wrist and the hand. It's that makes the difference. And any sport at all, women are not going to be challenging men. So that's the importance of strength. You know, if you're a woman and you want to be great at a sport, then you're gonna, if you're strong, you're really gonna give yourself the best chance. You're probably not gonna beat a guy of the same level, but you're gonna give yourself a good chance. And if, like the other 99% of the people, your goal is to look good naked, then you need to be relatively stronger. You need to be relatively stronger in all you do to look better.
Yeah. Well, for example, of course, we all like to think of Arnold Schwarzenegger maybe as one of our the people we'd model ourselves after. Maybe not. If people knew what actually went into that, they'd probably opt to know. But even though he wasn't a power lifter, he wasn't really that concerned with strength, to my understanding. But he did still, you know, do huge sets of squats with 140 plus kilos on the bar, right? And that's not because he needed to be or he wanted to be strong. It's just that's kind of what was necessary to make him the way he was. So
yes, that's a good example. And in his first biography, The Education of a Bodybuilder, he actually lists, I believe, the I'm going off the top of my head here, but he lists the 1966, I think it is, European Powerlifting Championship as a competition won. So right in between all those bodybuilding titles he won, he also did compete as a powerlifter. And His training partner back in those days, Franco Colombo, mm-hmm. was a much more famous lifter. He was a very strong guy, and until he got injured, might have won the first World Strongest Man competition. Which is unheard of these days for a bodybuilder to be in a position to actually win a World Strongest Man competition. Arnold apparently could squat over 500 pounds for reps. That's 230 kilos for reps. Now, obviously, when people say for reps, that means two or more. Mm-hmm. Bench pressing as well, bent over rows, he'd use heavy weights, he'd do chin-ups with extra weight, you know, all that good stuff he would be able to do. And yes, as you say, Nick, he wasn't training to be the strongest guy in the world. He was training to be the best built guy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But like we're saying, there is a direct correlation. If Arnold can bench press 380 pounds for six reps, and he needs to put on some muscle size in his chest, shoulders, and arms, then he needs to try and move up to 400 pounds for those same amount of reps. Yeah, it still wouldn't be as much as Franco Colombo was doing, but to get bigger, in general, bigger muscle is a stronger muscle, especially when performing repetitions.
Great. And can I question the male versus female? Is there some reason genetically that women are not as strong as men? I mean, anecdotally, this seems to work, you know, with everything I've seen, but I'm just curious if there's some biological mechanism behind it or something.
Yes, that's a good question. I'm not sure if it's muscle fiber makeup. Because obviously men and women will both have fast twitch, slow twitch muscle fibers, etc. I'm not sure if it's a nervous system thing. It might just be that levers are slightly different. So women will often have longer femurs and also arms which angle out slightly, and that's more of I think that comes back to childbirth, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously a wider hip position means they can't jump as high or run as fast, because the transfer of power isn't the same. But I think it is muscle fiber makeup. But I could be wrong there. You caught me on the hop there, mate. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But I was thinking it also might have something to do with body fat as well. I mean, obviously they carry more. So like when you have the same weights, you know, the guys will simply have more muscle fiber at the same weight class than the women's may. So.
Do you know what? That might be the most obvious reason for it, that that at any given weight, usually women are going to have a higher percentage of body fat. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is also limited to basically sports where strength plays a key factor, obviously, in billiards and otherwise.
In the UK, and I sort of went off on a tangent and started speaking about golf at that point. But even stuff like snooker and darts, there haven't been any women. Now, obviously, it's extremely male dominant, these sports. Yeah, these are the old. It's a bit like pool in the US. It's a sport where it was a male retreat almost. They'd go to a bar and they'd play pool for hours. And it's the same as snooker in this country. Mm-hmm. But a couple of times there's been women who have threatened to break into to the elite in snooker, and they haven't managed to do it. Now, whether that's just because there's just not enough of them, the talent pool is so diluted, I'm not sure, but the fact remains there haven't been any women who are challenging at high level in even these relatively non-physical sports. But then again, I guess you could say the same for even something like chess, and that's zero physicality. So maybe it is social pressures. There are some great women chess players, and there's a group of three sisters, and this was something that was outlined in a book I read a few months ago called Bounce, and this I believe is Hungarian guy had all his daughters become the best female chess player in the world. At one point or another, yeah. So one succeeded the other.
Wow.
But again, they didn't challenge for the world championship. So, yeah, I believe they were good, solid players and grandmaster level, etc. But that one I can't claim is down to strength. Not unless picking up the pieces and moving them is a physical. Yeah, a physical need. It's a physical need, but it's not a physical challenge.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to preparation.
Yeah. This is just a short little section, and this is kind of my little compromise. So with this, I'm saying that at some point, whatever you're doing, even if you're a marathon runner, then you should be you should be strength training at some point in your program, and with this I talk about programs being split into what we call GPP, which is general physical preparation, and SPP, which is specific physical preparation. Now, if you're a marathon runner, strength training will go into your GPP. It's just something that you generally do to make you to make you stronger. Your specific work will obviously be the running. And again, with many sports, it will be it will be that way. It's the strength work is in the general physical preparation area. So I'm not saying that people should concentrate all their efforts on strength training, but it should be in there somewhere. So with powerlifting, obviously, it's the specific nature of it that matters to me and you, Nick. But with others, yeah, it might be as little as 20 minutes twice a week to make sure that your knees, ankles, hips, shoulders are just kept with some form of stress going through them to help with being better at 10K runs, for example.
Yep.
So that's just a little aside. So it doesn't have to be, you know, I'm not saying it has to be the main focus of everyone's program. Although I think for physique change, which getting back to, you know, what people want to hear from us, that's 99% of what people want. You know, we love being strong and having a big squat or deadlift. Most people couldn't care less about it, but having a big squat or deadlift is going to make you look better. So that's really the key. So for physique change, it's going to be a very high priority in your program.
Yeah, that kind of goes back to the whole bulking up and then cutting down kind of thing. At least since I'm trying to get really lean here, it's, you know, I'm glad I have a few years of powerlifting under my belt, because I still only work out twice a week, right? But I can push the weights and I can lose weight pretty darn easily, whereas a beginner without that strength background is just going to have to struggle to gain strength and to gain mass. I mean, really struggle every time.
Yeah, absolutely. You're almost talking there again, and I know we've sort of, you know, this is the dead dog we keep flogging, isn't it? The goals. Mm-hmm. We've talked about goals. Funny enough, I was listening to our first three podcasts, and I was thinking we're talking about goals probably more than we need to here. That's strange in itself, isn't it? That we're actually talking about something that important too much. but it goes back to having goals which are diametrically opposed. You know, you get some kid who wants to have a nice chest and shoulders and all the rest of it, but he wants to keep the six pack. So as soon as he starts putting some weight on, it's like, oh, I think my six pack is going, and so he cuts his calories and he loses his muscle. Mm-hmm. And he loses his muscle and he looks at himself and he thinks, oh, I'm skinny in the arms and shoulders, I need to put some weight on. And he keeps going back and forth doing these little 2-week micro cycles. As soon as something changes, he decides he's not happy with it, and of course he never actually changes overall. He never actually puts that muscle on to make himself look better. So yeah, it's kind of opposing goals. But I better go back to strength training, otherwise I'll go off on the right tangent here. Yeah, but sorry about that, everyone. But the issue here is, okay, so if I want to look good, what do I need to do? What sort of strength work do I need to do? And I think most people who know our site and know us, Nick, and know the podcast are going to realize that we can categorize the type of strength that's needed into we could actually say pushing, can't we, what a pushing exercise. And everyone thinks, okay, bench, press, but you know, a squat is a pushing
squat,
exercise.
Definitely.
A deadlift is a pushing exercise. So it's almost
definitely
like you
pulling, right?
Sorry, pulling exercise. Yep. yeah so your squats are it's pushing and pulling. You can put it where you like.
Yeah, deadlift's just a wonderful exercise.
My lower body pushing day, I'm going to deadlift. And then the next day, it's my lower body pulling day, I'm going to deadlift.
Yep. Just be like Pavel, right? Pavel, you just need to deadlift and bench press.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hey, there's been worse things said, I think.
Pushing, pulling, and more pushing.
Exactly. So yeah, you can push for upper body and lower body. So obviously all the presses are your upper body pushes, and squats, we'll just call squats a lower body push here. Then you got pulling for upper body and lower body. So all those good pulling exercises, rows, chins, face pulls, I think are just an absolute essential pulling exercise for the upper body, which many people don't do. And the importance of face pulls is it's fantastic for your foot, for your upper back and your postural muscles. So there's a lot of nice little additions there to not just making your upper back look good, but actually sorting out postural issues and stuff like that. And then we have lower body pull is obviously you could call, yeah, deadlifts a lower body pull. And your favorite, Nick, the glute ham raise, would be a lower body pull.
Oh, I like that one. quick aside, I showed my new training partner those, and they were kind of difficult. And so he's going to work on them a bit, which is great, because everybody should be doing glute ham raises.
There are ways of hooking it up. I've seen people on the seat to lat pull down machines.
That's what we do. That's what we do.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Or you can wheel a bench over to a pulley and you have your training partner hold your ankles. And with the pulley, you'd use just enough weight to help yourself come up. Because obviously what you're losing leverage by not being able to use a glute ham raise bench, you can make up in with a little bit of assistance on the pulley.
Yep.
So there's a few ways of doing them, but they're quite an exercise, aren't they, buddy?
Yep. I realized I was I was on a Roman chair, but it was a bench, and so the bar where I put my ankles under was right by the head, and so I realized I was touching my nose to the bench, you know, and just hands behind the head, and I was doing my glute hammies, and I was going, somebody's ass was here like not too long ago, and I didn't realize it. So like, you know, I go and I wash my face off after I'm done with my glute ham raises, which shouldn't be necessary, but it was kind of gross once I realized it. I was going, oh, that's just disgusting. Anyway, moving on.
Nick, you have to sort of suspend all thought process in most training facilities.
I do.
Yeah, I remember. One of my training partners is gay, and he posted a picture, a sort of made up picture of and it had UFC or mixed martial arts, and it had some big hairy bloke.
Oh boy.
With his head in someone's crutch, and then it also it had the same picture, and it said gay porn. Yeah, when I used to train, do martial art training, we used to joke, fairly liberal minded guys that we were, we'd sort of say, this is about as close as two guys can get without having sex.
Yeah.
And it would bother, you know, you could see the guys who it would really bother them.
Yep.
Not like hearing that.
Who wants to do wrestling?
Exactly. Especially on the days I wore my yellow spandex, absolutely.
Oh boy. You can just see you on the cover of Kill Bill in your yellow spandex.
Yeah, just like that, Nick. Anyway, how did we get onto that? I don't. Yeah, oh yeah, you're glute.
You're not as pretty as Uma Thurman.
No, wouldn't mind wearing her spandex for a while. No, anyway, we shouldn't go there.
No. We were talking about pulling, and I think you were going to talk about dragging or carrying stuff.
Which is stuff that's neglected, unfortunately, but. Stuff like dragging and carrying, and there I'm getting into sled drills and stuff like that. Is absolutely fantastic. You know, just grab something and drag it across the ground. Yeah, it's very effective for helping strength, and also a lot of athletes use sled dragging for recovery, because there's no what we call eccentric component to the lift. So if you think when you're squatting, you have to lower the bar before you then lift the bar. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're dragging a sled, there's no lowering phase. And that means there's less pain, and many people think that it's actually really good for recovery. And of course, the other component, the carrying bit, farmer's walks are just a fantastic exercise. Yeah, that's going to make someone strong in their hands, their upper back, shoulders, even in their hips to a degree. So yeah. All those components, most people concentrate on the pushing and pulling of upper and lower body, but the carrying and dragging bit is good to do once in a while. You know, I've heard of some people who even, you know, they'll push their car for, you know, 100 metres or something, you know, just to do sort of, okay, so that's a pushing exercise, but it's kind of in the carrying, dragging mode. There's no eccentric there.
Actually, that would be fun to do just at the end of a session. You know, go down the street, find out who doesn't have their brakes on, and push their car back and forth a bit.
some random guy turns up. Where's my car gone?
See somebody pushing it away. That would be great. Hey, come back here. Oh, no.
Hey, I'll bring it back in a second, but pal. All right, then. They're probably not going to argue with you, are they?
Yeah, just don't push down a hill because it's tough going back up.
Now, the thing is with I think we're sort of well into the importance of strength here. But someone like people like us, Nick, you know, the very few who listen to this and aren't interested in physical appearance, they might be thinking, so how do I know when I'm strong? What is strong? And I don't know if you remember, I wrote an article for Get Mighty Now about what was considered strong, and in that article I referenced a couple of one person, Mark Ripto, who wrote a couple of excellent books, Starting Strength and Practical Programming. And in Starting Strength, he has a chart where he says, okay, this is a beginner's level, and he takes five, what he considers to be the five main lifts, which are squat, deadlift, bench press, overhead press, and power clean. And in those, he actually says, okay, this is when you're, this is when you're an advanced lifter. This is when you're an elite lifter. This is when you're an average lifter. I don't think he used the word average. Probably intermediate.
This is when you're an average.
average.
Oh, congratulations! Thanks. You've gone from totally worthless to average.
Yeah, it's true though, isn't it?
It is.
Tate had his continuum, didn't he? I think it went shit, suck, okay, and good, or something, or good, great. Shit, suck, good, great, I think it was.
Yep.
He goes, where are you on this? And he basically, you know, everyone would be in the shit or suck category.
Yep.
So it could be worse. Yeah, it was a nice little continuum that Mark Ripto used, and people could look at it and go, oh, okay, I'm sort of I need another 20 pounds in the power clean to be good, and that might be a good little carrot for people, something that people want to chase.
Yep.
But from memory, I can't actually remember if it was. I don't think it was actually done on body weight. Whereas
I think the BDFPA had body weight ones.
That's right. Yeah. So the BDFPA is the British Drug Free Powerlifting Association. It's the association that I used to lift with before I had. Before I had my shoulder issues, and hopefully we'll lift with again next year. And their handbook is available online. So if anyone wants to look at it, if you just go to it's bdfpa.co.uk. So all the UK based websites aren't .com, they're .co.uk. And I believe it's around page 85 or something in this handbook. And you sort of think, a handbook? 85 pages? Wow, it's fairly in-depth. But they have a table for the squat, bench, and deadlift. And it will say at this weight, this is, and they really go back to, infant school or kindergarten, if you might call it. And, they have gold, silver, bronze level for each lift. And then it goes black, blue, whatever. And it works its way right down to, I think there's about, 8 or 10 categories that you can work through. So
the bottom is hot pink.
Is that, I think one of them is hot pink, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. A few people I know who sort of stuck at that one. but it's quite good. I remember when I was, the last time I competed, I had a gold squat, and I think my bench was something like bronze, or it might not have even been a bronze, and it just, you know, you sort of look at it and you go, well, that shows that my bench really sucks. Okay, I knew that my bench sucks for a reason, as in my shoulders were screwed.
Yeah.
But it sort of, it gives you an idea of, oh, well, if my squat's at this point, or if my deadlift's at that point, then my bench should really be, you know, I should be looking at getting up here. So again, you know, these things are good just for giving you an idea of relativity. So if you can squat 200 kilos, you should probably be benching 150. Yeah. If you can squat 200 and bench 150, you're probably looking at deadlifting 230. So these are guidelines. And obviously that's very simplified because, every lift is dependent on your levers and, you know, how good your body is at overcoming a weak point. So that's why you're a good deadlifter, Nick, because you got long arms. You know, you can get yourself set in a nice high position, good upright back and pull. Whereas, those long arms aren't going to help you so much in the bench press.
I thought it was because I had a really big ass that I could do the deadlift.
Well, we developed that big ass, yeah.
Oh, you know. Okay.
You didn't have a big ass when you first turned up. That sort of, that big ass and the big back sort of came later. But yes, that helped. Strange, you know, all the lifters who come here, they sort of develop a big ass and a big upper back and, yeah, strange how they look, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think the upper back stuff came more from the heavy deadlifting, right? I had a pretty good size derriere before I even met you.
Yeah.
I used to sit on two chairs, Chris.
They called you two chairs, Nick, did they?
Yep. You know, you get one of those lawn chairs and you go, whoop, and then you're stuck inside of it until you peel yourself out. And
summer parties, can you sort of flex your butt and stand up with the chair attached to your butt?
Oh, this was before I knew you, when I used to be fat.
But I've done that before. I've sort of like flexed my butt at some party and stood up with the chair attached to it. That's caused much hilarity.
Well, it would really be funny is if you could do like, you know, like flex it and then like jump around like a pogo stick or something. But
yeah, bounce on it.
Yeah.
Anyway, and of course, after we look at, you know, what Mark Riptow in Starting Strength said is strong, and what the BDFPA handbook say is strong, we also have Internet Strong, and that's where we have to be quite. We have to be quite careful because everywhere you look on the internet, people are squatting 800 pounds or 360 kilos and bench pressing 230 kilos. And it's weird, Nick, but when I occasionally look around gyms, I don't see much of that. Might be. That's quite strange because apparently it's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, strangely enough, I haven't seen any 500 pound bench presses apart from in competition, and that's pretty rare in drug free unequipped competition. I think in my life I've seen one 500-pound bench press, which I'm fairly sure was drug-free and was unequipped. Yeah, that you can always tell.
Yeah,
weird that, isn't it?
It's if you're reading the forums of just about anywhere, I mean, I don't know, maybe that's just where all the monsters lurk. But I mean, from what I know, the people with the really big gyms, I mean, they have their own little cliques, but they're not sitting around on bodybuilding.com or tnation.com and saying, I just benched 600 pounds with one arm. And I'm only 5'4". And I don't eat protein, because protein's bad for you. Screw the supplement companies.
I'm vegan, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a vegan, one-arm, 600-pound bodybuilder on bodybuilding.com. Buy my book. It's pretty ridiculous, but I mean, there's so many people out there that are they just? I guess they just do it for shits and giggles, right? So,
yeah, well, they're trolls, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think that's what they're referred to these days. We used to, before when there'd be some guy in the gym who'd always be the, I used to do this and I used to do that.
Yeah.
You'd have those guys, and they've kind of been replaced now by people who don't even go to the gym. They just sort of sit there and say, oh yeah, I do this and I do that and I do the other. And of course, I don't really waste time on these people. It's more of a warning, but just be aware, dear listener, that there's lots of people out there who in a kind of Schadenfreude way. So Schadenfreude is a German philosopher who talked about about gaining pleasure from the misfortune of others. And there's people, and this is kind of Schadenfreude. You know, they'll say, oh yeah, you know, everyone can bench press 400 pounds at least. Yeah, God dear, you know, can't you do that really? God, surely
you should give up.
Yeah, just you're worthless. You know, there's people who seem to get some sort of pleasure from that, and that's not the real world. Even in elite competition, I'd say, in the world championships I've been to, some of the heavier weight classes, they'll be benching, they'll have guys in there who will bench 200 kilos, maybe 210. But there's not many, I tell you what, there's not many over 400 pounds, so 182 kilos. There's not many over that.
Yeah.
And they'll all be 100 kilo plus lifters who are. Yeah. You know, it's not that common. And I'm talking international class lifters here. I'm not talking about, you know, just some bloke down the gym. This is serious lifting. It's amazing how many, when you actually see the real numbers. So yeah, I don't want to discourage people. Yeah, if you can bench press 400 pounds and or more, then good on you. But it's the most I've ever done. Okay, as I say, I'm kind of bashed up through years of fighting and all the rest of it. But the best I've done with a pause is 150. Yeah, that's 330 pounds. It's not a lot, but there's I don't see people around there doing too much more.
Yeah. Well, anyway, and you can have the you'll see this stupid stuff on YouTube. You know, they'll have their buddies. You'll have the bro press, so they might have 500 pounds on the bar or something, and they'll have four guys take it off, and then they'll go about an inch with it, and then they'll rack it. And that is not what we're talking about for a competition bench press, unequipped, drug-free. That might be unequipped, drug-free, stupid with four bro spotters, but it's not an elite bench press.
Yes. It's interesting when lifters talk. You'll hear something like, "Oh, I did this in the gym," and they'll just ignore you. you did it in the gym, it doesn't count. It only counts if it's on the platform in front of three judges.
Yep.
which is somewhat harsh, but that's the measure. Yeah, that's what and in powerlifting they'll talk about, okay, well, what federation was that? Because there are certain federations where it's known that certain latitude is allowed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're benching, they won't have much of a pause. You know, they'll shout press as soon as you touch as soon as you're anywhere near touching, they'll shout press. They'll let your butt come off the bench. As long as it's not too obvious. And it's funny, even in powerlifting, you have this. You have certain federations that have these reputations, you know, high squats and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
But and there's some in my federation which is considered. I still call it my federation, even though I haven't lifted in it for 3 years now. There's some there that they will dismiss if you say, I did this lift in a competition. It was this federation's national championships. They won't even count that.
Yep.
Say, well, yeah, that's 6 inches high.
Yeah.
Very snobbish, anyway. Okay, so we have so that's when do you know you're strong? And there's a few things there for people to mull over. It comes down to for the vast majority of people, they don't really care if they're strong or weak or indifferent. It's just about looking good, which brings us to this is kind of shoehorned in, isn't it, Nick?
I wanted to throw this one in here because I guess recently there was this episode of BBC Horizons, season 50, episode 12. Can't remember the name of it, but something about exercise. And I watched the episode and I was pretty thoroughly unimpressed, and I think that's what you said as well. But kind of one of the things that I took away from this, there is the whole smarter is better for training, which I couldn't agree with more. And they had some really good stuff in there, like talking about high-intensity interval training and NEPA and so forth. But basically they took this guy and, you know, they did some blood work on him, and they had him go through a little bit of aerobic exercise, and they said you're a non-responder when it comes to aerobics, therefore don't bother with them. It was pretty much what I took away from it. And that no point in exercising since your VO2 max didn't go up. I wanted to ask you about that, Chris, and just say, you know, does the same thing happen in strength, or is that just an aerobic thing, or are these people just full of BS? Because that sounded like a pretty pessimistic message there.
Yeah, I've heard the term non-responders VO2 max wise for a few years, but I would say what does it matter to most people? Yeah, that's the question. This guy in this TV show, it started off, he was talking to an athlete, and he actually pulled his hamstring having a little race with him. Do you remember that, Nick?
Oh, of course.
One of the opening scenes.
They said, we're going to warm up. And, of course, he's like, I'm going to pull my hamstring on the first step.
but
not a warm-up. That's overdoing
that's right.
it.
Exactly. He overdid the warm-up. Yeah, we'll have to spend a whole podcast on warming up, probably, I think, Nick.
Yeah, but the whole
show started with look at this athlete's six pack, and that's what I want to do, and I'd like to have that, and there was the slightly misshapen goal set straight away.
Mm-hmm.
But then they just went off on this tangent of health markers and aerobic exercise and how effective or ineffective it is, and they didn't actually address anything that this guy needed to do to actually get his six pack.
Yeah,
you know, they just spoke about aerobic exercise, and aerobic exercise is fine for your heart and lungs, but it's not going to really change the shape of your body too much. So Well done, BBC, your flagship science programme, Horizon, which I was quite shocked when Nick put down. It's Series 50. That's quite impressive, actually, Series 50. Yeah. Yeah, and I regularly watch Horizon for science, for proper science news. the search for dark matter or the Higgs boson or so, you know, that's the sort of stuff this program covers. And then when they cover something that I'm very familiar with, like health and fitness, and I look at how badly it was done, I have to admit I was very disappointed. I think I have to take up my right as a UK citizen and write to the BBC about this and let them know how disappointed I am. I actually have time this week, so I might do that.
Make your voice heard, Chris.
Disgusted, signed Chris. Disgusted from Streatham Hill. His VO2 max didn't go up. Okay, so that basically means he's not going to be challenging for the Tour de France this year. Okay? What else does it mean? Well, you know, his VO2 max, as long as it's functionally good enough to actually take in some oxygen and use, that's what a VO2 max test does. It's testing how much oxygen you can take in and use at maximal exertion. Right, so if he can do that, it doesn't mean you can't get better at cycling, running, whatever, because you can do. You can improve your skills doing those tasks. Mm-hmm. But it just means that's as much oxygen as his lungs take in. And maybe the training he was doing wasn't stimulating an increase in VO2 max. But the key thing is, it was irrelevant to what he wanted to achieve anyway. And going back to your question, Nick, are there non-responders in strength? Well, you live in Asia, right? I've often said, if I was to come back, if reincarnation existed, I'd probably like to come back as a South Sea Islander. Right, so a Samoan or someone like that, you know, they've got like 12-inch circumference wrists and stuff. You know, they're just ridiculously gifted for strength and physical pursuits. You know, they all play rugby and they're all strong and they're all powerful and you just sort of. A naturally skinny, fat white boy like myself looks at people like that with huge amounts of jealousy. Yeah. I also look at there was a lovely guy who I helped out a few years ago, who's half English, half Sri Lankan, and he's got the really very slender build that Sri Lankans and people from that part of Asia are fairly famous for. And him putting on 5 kilos, bloody hell, he had to work his arse off. And we got his squat up to 125 kilos, which, again, for him, that was over double body weight. You know, that was wow. Tough going. And he was looking good. And you sort of think, you know, there's other people I've got coming in who he could see. And they were over 125 kilos in 3-4 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah, and he's saying, Chris, I worked so bloody hard for this. And I go, yeah, but it's all relative. You know, you're not going to be, he's probably never going to be a world powerlifting champion or any strength sport, but he still looked a lot better than he did without training. So he's kind of a non-responder. So I think, it's rather than, I don't like the term non-responder. I think there's, if we're going to be absolutely honest about it, there's people who don't respond that well, and then you have the genetic freaks.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to go off on one a little bit here, Nick. So it's a bit of a Chris tangent alert here. But a few years ago, and when I say a few years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, there's a guy who brought out a series of books called Brawn. Have you heard of these Brawn books, Nick?
I think so.
Okay, and he pushed these books at hard gainers, right? And if and he'd write articles for the bodybuilding magazine saying, if you're a hard gainer, you have to train, you know, the way we say in the Braun books. You know, and the program they had, Nick, was it was like Western periodization. So, you know, week one would be 50%, week two 55%, week three 60%, week four 65%. So it's just a linear progression.
Yeah.
Over and this was over 6 months.
Wow.
So you would take 6 months to build up to a hard set of five on the squat. Yeah, but you'd start off with, you know, 40 kilos. Mm-hmm. And after 6 months, you'd have built up to 140, and you'd do a set of five, and then you'd start again. And that was the secret for the hard gainer, not to overtrain, not to push it too hard too often. And of course, I looked at this, and in those days, I sort of said, this doesn't feel right. You know, I was very much into, you know, you could almost tell if a certain type of training was productive just by how it felt. But, you know, squatting with 40 kilos didn't feel right. Bench pressing with 30 kilos didn't feel right. It felt like a complete waste of time. And of course it was. But I remember, you know, reading these articles, and it was very convincing. It was the usual sort of pseudo-scientific play on, you know, you identify a certain community. So, you people are sick, therefore you need to buy into my cure here. And that was that was pretty much the way Braun worked. But his prey, his sick clientele were the hard gainers. And if you if you didn't have 20-inch arms, you were a hard gainer.
So that's pretty much. And it's a really good self-fulfilling prophecy you're talking about there, because he's having them do stuff that's not going to make them any bigger or any stronger, and it's going to take up a huge amount of their time, so they're going to think they're hard gainers. And when the reality is, you know, if they just would have put a bit of weight on and had a few challenging sessions, they probably would have gained strength a lot faster.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, So yes, I believe, and of course, using this sort of language is very, very limiting as well for a lot of people. If you say you are a hard gainer, mm-hmm. then someone's going to go to the gym and go, oh God, I've got to lift again. I really want to be, more muscular and stronger, but I'm a hard gainer. I don't know if it's ever going to happen. Rather than go into the gym and say, right, you know, the last time I did sets of 10 in the squat, I got 80 kilos. This time I want to get 82 or 85 kilos. That's where the focus should be. The focus should be on performance. The focus shouldn't be on what label either someone's given you or you've given yourself.
Yep.
And we're going, anyway, I guess we're going back to stuff we discussed the last few weeks.
Actually, I'd like to hit on that labeling thing just a little bit more, if I may.
Yeah.
So this week with my math kids, you know, I was talking to them all for their first class, and this is relevant, actually. but, you know, I said, what's the difference between a student who thinks they're good at math and a student who thinks that they're rubbish, that they're not good at math? And it basically comes down to, you know, the students that think they're good at math, when they're given a tough problem, they think, well, I'm good at math, so I'm going to solve this. And so they put in a bunch of time, effort, they pull all their resources, you know, and they figure out a way to solve the problem. Whereas the people who think they're bad at math, you know, they're going to give up a lot earlier. Oh, I'm bad at math, I can't do this, and then they're done. And the only real difference between the ones that solve it and the ones that don't is the amount of time and the amount of effort. And especially with math, that's true, but it's the same thing with lifting, because, you know, if you don't put in the time and the effort, you know, if you think, well, I'm a bad lifter, I'm going to give up now, you're not going to achieve anything, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. But if you think, damn, I'm a strong lifter, wow, I have a great work ethic, I'm going to do this, then you're probably going to do pretty damn well, regardless of what your stance is.
Yeah, and the thing is, people listening to this might sort of think, oh, here we go, pop psychology and all the rest of it. And, you know, We're not believers in this at all, are we, Nick?
Not at all. We're hardcore skeptics. And but I see these discouraged math kids all the time, and you see discouraged trainers all the time, and you know we try to improve them, and this actually gets through to them. So
yeah, absolutely. And it's one little goal at a time, and it's achieving a sensible goal on a regular basis. Okay, this session I'm going to do this, and you do it, and you go, I can do this, and success breeds success, and talking from a coaching perspective here, and we touched on this. It was either last session or the session before when I was talking about a chap who was the British Olympic weightlifting coach, and he had a girl who he just kept saying, do it again. Do it again, and she kept missing a particular weight in the snatch. That can be extremely damaging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get a certain weight in your head that you keep missing, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, like you said, and that's where a good coach can come in. That's where a good coach can say, you know what, I think you've got this. You got this weight in you, and you get to that fine line, Nick, don't you? Where let's say you're following a good weight training system like the system that we're going to be bringing out soon, the Mighty Strong program, and you're doing the max effort phase, and you progress up, and you've done a bottom up squat with 160 kilos, and it was tough, then. If your training partner slash coach is good, they'll sort of look at that and go, yeah, come on, 165, you're going to get this. And they'll be 90% sure that you're going to get this. Yep. A bad coach or training partner will say, yeah, 180, let's go. And of course, you get buried. So, and the more you get buried, obviously, the more frustration. I'm not saying never miss lists, never attempt something you can't do. But you have to pick your battles.
Yeah. You can't do that every session, especially once you get past a beginner lifter.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But, yes, but that's does that answer your question? And does that sort of cover the whole, the issues arising from horizons?
Yeah, I think so. The main thing was just, I don't know, that show was all over the place, and I thought it was, it had a few good points, but overall it was done pretty poorly, and the whole giving up essentially all aerobics because of the VO2 max not going up, I think he still did some, he decided to keep doing the cycling for some reason or another, but because it helped out with his blood work, I guess. But, yeah, I mean that pretty much covers it.
Yeah, this guy was a doctor, though. What's that, sorry, mate?
We all respond differently, and it's a spectrum. You know, some people are going to respond really well, some people aren't. You know, like we always like to use my younger brother as an example, who would live off of Mountain Dew and Ho Ho's, which are little, they're like Twinkies. You're familiar with Twinkies, right?
Yeah.
So and he'd always have pretty much visible abs. And then there's like myself and my younger brother who were just Humpty Dumpties, unless we train our asses off. So, we all have different set points, but, it comes down really just to trying to be the best that you can be and competing with yourself, especially in powerlifting.
Yeah, well, I think powerlifting is a great sport in many ways. And one of the ways it's great is that it throws into sharp relief that it is really you against you, and that's a reflection of normal people training in the gym. It's not going to be you against the guy with 22 inch arms over there who's on a bunch of steroids. You know, you're not competing against him, but you can compete against yourself. You can improve, and it is that self improvement which is important. And then in powerlifting, in the gym, as in life, it's self improvement again. Yeah, I'm not going to be Einstein. I'm relatively average intelligence, I think. But I can make the most of my relatively average intelligence by choosing to read books which are going to expand my mind and follow pursuits which are going to expand my mind, as opposed to watching the usual absolute rubbish which ends up on television. You know, I don't watch X Factor. I don't watch soaps or anything like that. I choose to set my standards higher than that. And that's the thing. It's improving yourself, isn't it? For some people it is about winning championships, being the best. But there can only be and this is where we go against pop psychology. you can't, there's only one person who's going to be the best at something. And we can't all be winners.
Yeah.
We can be improvers, but we can't be winners.
Oh, so, well, can be. Like at my school, you usually have like the championship prize or something, and then you'll have like first grand prize, second grand prize, third grand prize, first gold medal, second gold medal, third gold. And we have to like spend just enormous amounts of time ranking kids by these ridiculous medals, you know, so that everybody feels like, oh, look, I got a gold medal, you know, and it's like, well, you got like 10th out of 12. You know, and this kind of false sense of accomplishment, you know, the kids don't buy into it a lot. And, and I don't know why we're still doing it, but, you know, when it comes down to lifting a weight, you know, quite honestly, well, I've never lifted this amount before and I'm trying to do a new record, and that's exciting. And then if you do it, you're going, wow, okay, I just did something. I've improved my body in a way that is, my body is now in a new state it's never been in before. I am the strongest I've ever been, or, you know, something to that effect. And it's amazing just getting older and thinking, wow, I'm stronger than ever and I'm older than ever. This is cool.
Yeah. That's where it really is, because, yeah, there are these freaks, I put in our outline here, Nick, about what examples of great strength are. Now, I've squatted 230 kilos in competition, and in the old days before steroids and lifting equipment and stuff like that, 500 pounds was the gold standard. Mm-hmm. And back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, there weren't actually many people around who could do that. It was quite unusual. And then you get a freak come along, like there's a guy called Paul Anderson, who was a farm boy, and the first time he went to college to play football, and it's in the States, he went to college to play football and was invited to squat with the offensive line, and they had 350 pounds, 160 kilos on the bar, and he did it for 10 times. He squatted 160 kilos 10 times, the first time he ever touched a barbell.
I did not know about that, which is just sick.
Wrong. It's just wrong. And within about 4 or 5 years, he was squatting over 700 pounds, which was unheard of then. Yeah, this was, yeah, that was the most weight anyone had ever done. They didn't have powerlifting records back then. Powerlifting didn't really exist as a sport until the mid-60s. And a few years after this, when he was squatting about 700 pounds, he actually became Olympic heavyweight champion in weightlifting. And he was the last American to win the heavyweight Olympic weightlifting gold medal, which for years was considered to be the sign of the strongest man. Mm-hmm. It just goes to show, you know, nothing, no training at all, and he just goes straight into squatting 160 for 10 reps, not just for a single, but for 10 reps. The whole squat thing with Anderson, it sort of culminated, I guess, the year after he retired from Olympic lifting, he went on to the Ed Sullivan Show. So this was so that's one for the kids, Nick.
I like the Ed Sullivan Show, but I guess not a lot of people will know about it my age.
Okay, so if you're under 50, the Ed Sullivan Show was sort of the forerunner of the Tonight Show or Letterman or something like that.
And it was better, too.
And you're an old traditionalist, Nick.
Yeah.
But on the Ed Sullivan Show, they got a whole bunch of equipment, and they had him doing a silver dollar squat, and it had this special bar with a safe on either end, a clear see-through safe, and all these safes were filled with silver dollars, and the actual weight of this bar was 1,197 pounds, so pretty much 500 kilos.
Yep.
And I've got a picture in one of my books of Paul Anderson squatting this, and yeah, by current standards, he's a little bit high in the squat, but
yep.
Bloody hell, yeah, that was one of the most amazing squats of all time in powerlifting, with equipment and with drugs. Which it's debatable around 1957. Could someone be using drugs in 57? Possibly, yes. But was Anderson using drugs? That's obviously, that's another question. But 500 kilos wasn't cracked until about 2005. And that was with lifting equipment. So 50
yeah.
years earlier, with just a flimsy belt. And no other equipment, shorts and a t-shirt. Paul Anderson pretty much squatted 500 kilos, which yeah, just an absolute freak of nature. This guy, he used to, he wasn't just a squatter as well. Obviously, he won the world the Olympic title in weightlifting. He was also a phenomenal presser. And he used to drive around the country, apparently raising money for his mission. He was a very religious guy, and used to he had a home for wayward kids, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd just drive around in this truck, literally drive to some town in nowhere, Nowheresville, Arizona or whatever, and get this. Specially made dumbbell at the back of his truck, loaded up with 300 pounds, press it several times, raise money, and then drive on to the next town, with little or no sleep in between. This guy was just amazing. 300 pound one arm press, Nick, is
massive.
That's just crazy. One of my lifetime goals is to press 300 pounds with two hands.
Yeah, you can see that on YouTube as well, the Anderson one-arm press. I don't know
That's
how much
right,
it was,
yeah.
But I think it was 315 or something. Now they call it, like, the circus dumbbell or something, but...
Yeah.
It's inspiring.
It is amazing, and you sort of look at that, and that is how strong some people... very few people, but that is how strong some people could be, and it's almost... you sometimes wonder, are these people a different species to the rest of us?
Bit more gorilla.
Yes. There's some Anderson ancestor which wasn't in my ancestral line.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. but there's someone like Usain Bolt, who rewrites the sprinting records, and Michael Phelps, who is a half man, half fish. You do have incidences throughout history where someone will be half man, half lifting device, half crane.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's so just to recap, I think that might be a good idea.
Quick recap, and we'll tie her up here.
Yeah. So the importance of strength overall. Even if your goal is to look good, there's a direct correlation between what you lift and how good you look. Obviously, you can have great numbers in the gym and overeat and not look that good. You know, hence the big fat strong guy stereotype.
Yep.
But so long as your eating is in line with your goals, then you're going to look better the stronger you are. That and also, the stronger you are, you're going to perform better as well. So you'll be better at a given sport most of the time if you're stronger.
So basically, no training program should be without some kind of strength component.
Exactly. It should be factored in no matter what you're doing. Even if you're an endurance swimmer, you're probably, you know, even with something like that, let's say you're going to get someone, we have nutters in the UK who talk about swimming the English Channel. So this is a 26-mile, I believe, stretch of water between England and France. Actually, yeah, it's probably a bit less than that. And there's hundreds of people every year who swim this stretch. Yeah, even if that's what you do, you need to keep your shoulders and hips and your abs pretty strong. You know, if you're going to keep your arms going over, some shoulder work's probably going to be needed. Some upper back work's probably going to be needed. Some hip work's probably going to be needed. So even something as endurance-based as that, there's still an element of strength which is needed.
All right. Well, I think that was a great episode on the importance of strength. So thank you again, Chris.
No, thank you, Nick, and I hope it was useful to the listeners.
Yeah. All right. And thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you again next week.